The June 30th deadline for Iran nuclear talks with world powers is almost here, and yet there appears to be no signs of a breakthrough. A third deadline for a deal is likely to be missed on Tuesday. It is said that a deal will lift sanctions on Iran, paving the way for foreign investments to flow into the country in exchange for curbs on Iran's nuclear activities. Iran has already offered to curb some of its nuclear program. Has the other side offered enough compromises, or has their demands been too excessive? Stay tuned to another edition of The Debate.
Iran and the P5 plus one group of countries are very much likely to miss their June 30 deadline to hammer out a deal over Tehran's nuclear program. The two sides' foreign ministers sat down in the Austrian capital, Vienna, to push for a breakthrough, but their Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, did not join them. After several sessions, the top diplomat returned home, while the U.S. Secretary of State, who is still nursing a broken leg, remained in Vienna. Kerry on Monday held a meeting with the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Yukio Amano.
Thank you.
He said it is too early to say the talks will succeed, adding that the two sides are just working and no judgment could be made now. Meanwhile, expert-level work continues on drawing up what could be one of the world's most complicated nuclear agreements. Negotiators from both sides are working hard to write down the details of a final pact. What is almost certain is that there is no chance of nailing down the accord by Tuesday, and the parties are planning to keep negotiating beyond the June 30th deadline.
We have some hurdles that we need to pass, and we have said from the very beginning that if all sides have a serious understanding of the realities on the ground and the need to move forward based on what we have already agreed, without excessive demands and with political will, we can reach a conclusion, and I hope we can.
The lifting of anti-Iran sanctions and the inspection of the country's military sites are the major unresolved issues. Iran and the five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany reached an understanding for a possible nuclear accord in Luzon back in April. According to the Luzon framework, Iran will slash the number of its uranium enrichment centrifuges, shrinking its uranium stockpile, and change the design of the Arak reactor. In return, it is seeking a lifting of a complicated web of EU, US, and UN sanctions. But finalizing a comprehensive agreement is fraught with potential pitfalls. This includes the exact timetable of steps by Iran, the timing and the pace of sanctions relief, and the IAEA access to Iranian military sites. Iran, that doubts the sincerity of U.S. and its allies, says it has its own conditions.
یک نکته اساسی دیگر این که لغو تحریم‌ها منوط به اجرای تعهدات ایران نیست. اجراییات لغو تحریم با اجراییاتی که ایران به عهده می‌گیرد باید متناظر باشند. بخشی از این در مقابل بخشی از اون. یک نکته اساسی دیگر این است که ما با موکول کردن هر اقدامی به گزارش آژانس مخالفیم. ما با آژانس بدبینیم. آژانس نشان داده که هم مستقل نیست، هم عادل نیست. با بازرسی‌های غیر متعارف هم بنده موافق نیستم، با پرسجو از شخصیت‌ها هم به هیچ وجه قبول ندارم و موافق نیستم.
Reaching a solution requires a serious political will from the P5 plus one countries to end the long-standing standoff over Iran's nuclear program. The lack of this determination will lead to more tensions and instability in an already volatile region.
Our guest for this edition of The Debate, historian and investigative journalist Gareth Porter, who joins us from Vienna. We have former assistant to the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Lawrence Korb, who joins us from Washington. Well, gentlemen, welcome. Let me start with you, Gareth Porter, who's in Vienna. June 30th deadline of tomorrow, it appears it may be missed. Maybe you can tell us whether or not that's going to happen. What are the chances that the stumbling blocks are too big to lead to a deal?
Well, there certainly is a degree of possibility that has to be attached to that contingency, But I think that at this moment, the differences that still exist are such that both sides absolutely should be able to reach an agreement. The only possible reason at this point that I can see why the agreement should not be reached in the next few days is that the United States is the Obama administration is still intimidated so much by the influence of the Israeli lobby on the U.S. Senate that it continues to stick with positions that otherwise really have no basis in reality at all.
So, Lawrence Korb, do you agree with our guest Gareth Porter, the influence of Israel's lobby on the U.S. Senate, that may be what would keep the U.S. corner tough on its stance?
No, I don't think so, because President Obama was able to get an agreement with the Congress that after the deal is concluded, they have 30 days to vote it up or down, and if they vote it down, he can veto it, which means he only needs one-third of both houses to overturn it. So, and it's not just AIPAC and the other Israeli lobby. Last week, you had a letter signed by people like General Petraeus and General Cartwright and Bob Einhorn, who was one of the original negotiators, saying, you know, don't give in. So there's a lot of posturing going on. A week ago, you had the Iranian parliament laying down conditions, which, you know, their negotiators had not acceded to. There's a lot of posturing going on, but a little bit more optimistic than Gareth. I think that like with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a lot of people thought that was dead, and they were able to get it through Congress. I think what I do worry about, you want to get it done by July 9th, because if you don't, then Congress has 60 days to act, and they could drag it out. So I hope, I don't think they'll get it by tomorrow, but I hope they get it by July 9th.
Well, Gareth Porter, why don't you tell us what are the stumbling blocks? Because there have been so many, and now it's been limited. What is it right now that perhaps is the last of the stumbling blocks in order to reach that so-called agreement?
Well, before I identify the stumbling blocks, maybe I could just clarify, make it clear that what I'm saying is not that they won't be able to reach an agreement, but that if they fail to do so, then the only reason I can see why that would happen is, in fact, the fear of the Senate vote that it's going to be too heavily influenced by the propaganda that's being put out by the lobby. So I am not necessarily pessimistic, but I'm trying to look to that possibility that still exists. But the major stumbling blocks, as I understand it, are still the problem of the timetable and sequencing, if you will, for the lifting of sanctions, the question of access by the IAEA to Iranian sites to inspect them, and the question of what they call the possible military dimensions, the allegations of former work on nuclear weapons against the Iranian government. I think if those three issues can be solved in the coming days, then they will, in fact, be able to reach an agreement.
Lawrence Korb, one of the things that Iran's leader has said is that the IAEA is not independent. And there's some reasons that has been obviously pointing to that direction based on Iran's experience with the IAEA. Do you believe that IAEA at this point is an independent body that is releasing information on Iran's nuclear program without any sway one way or another in terms of the way the reports have been released?
Well, if you look at their past history, I think
they have been
independent. If you're asking
me, the answer is very unequivocal.
They told President Bush that Saddam Hussein had...
Go ahead, Lawrence Korb.
Okay, I mean, they told President Bush that, you know, Saddam Hussein didn't have nuclear weapons. So I think they're pretty independent, pretty independent agency. And remember, and I think while obviously the focus is on the United States as the world's leading power, there are, several other countries involved here in the negotiations. One of the toughest is the French. The French are much more adamant than we are about some of these things. So I do think that the IAEA, to the extent that anybody in the world can be independent, it really is responsible to the United Nations, which includes, almost 200 nations.
And Gareth Porter, same question to you. We know that that John Kerry had spoken to Yukio Amano, but the independence of the IAEA has come into question for Iran. Why do you think that would be?
Well, this is a question that I've really investigated pretty deeply over the last few years. And I have to say, I really disagree very strongly with my friend Larry Korb on this one, because the fact is that, yes, the IAEA was independent under Mohammed El-Baradei in the early part of the last decade, from 2000 to 2007 or 2008. But beginning in 2008, you begin to see a trend here where the high-ranking officials under El-Baradei were essentially working hand-in-hand with the Bush administration. They were no longer acting independently of the Bush administration's policy. And of course, when Amano became the successor to Mohammed El-Baradei, that independence was completely extinguished. And, you know, Amano was elected on an understanding with the Bush administration, with the Obama administration, that he would, in fact, be fully supportive of U.S. policy. And he has, in fact, acted very much in such a way as to make sure that he was in line with U.S. policy. So I think that the record here is extremely clear on that one.
And also, Lawrence Korb, I need to mention this 2006 book, State of the War, The Secret History of the CIA and the Bush Administration. You got the New York Times journalist James Risen. He said the CIA had attempted to plant evidence in Iran that would make it seem the country was pursuing nuclear weapons. You know, this puts into, obviously, light why Iran is distrustful when it comes to the United States, distrustful especially when it comes to the issue of simultaneity.
Well, I think, again, James Risen's book was more about the Bush administration. I think the Obama administration, you may remember when he came in, he reached out to Iran and got a lot of criticism, you know, here in the United States, and then was under his leadership that we began the negotiations. So I think he has a completely different attitude, and I think he wants this agreement, because this, he's getting toward the end of his term, and he sees this as his great historical legacy, because obviously since the withdrawal from Iraq, things have not worked out that well. And I think the one thing he is, and it gets lost in the in a lot of the debates, if the talks collapse, the worst thing would be for the United States to get blamed, because it would be our allies and people around the world who want an agreement, who basically want to move on from this issue, which has taken up so much focus here in the last last decade, particularly given the other problems we have in the Middle East with ISIL in Iraq and the whole mess in Syria. So that's the last thing I think he wants his administration to be blamed for this.
Gareth Porter, do you think the United States cares so much, in particular Obama, that this is obviously the last term, that he needs to get this deal? Or is it what some have said, like the UK accord, saying, you know what, no deal is better than a bad deal?
Well, I do agree that President Obama wants to have a deal with Iran. And in fact, politically, from a political point of view, he badly needs an agreement with Iran. And the problem, it seems to me, is that he has been has bought into a false narrative about the Iranian nuclear program, which has impelled him to take very, very hard-line positions, which are, from any objective point of view, really unnecessary and provocative in terms of their impact on the views of the Iranian government toward this set of negotiations. And I think we see this primarily in regard to the issues of what they call the possible military dimensions, and the demand which the Obama administration has in the past at least embraced for what they call anywhere, anytime inspection rights for the authority, for the IAEA. Both of those positions are really only justified on the basis of a very extreme position on the nuclear intentions of Iran, which simply cannot be supported on the basis of the actual history of their nuclear program. So I'm sorry to say that I think that Obama personally and his advisors have all bought into this falsehood, and it has really shaped their position in the negotiations far too much.
Well, let's look at Lawrence Korb about the IAEA in terms of the inspections. They're probably one of the most severe inspections that's placed on countries that are signatory to the NPT. And it says that the UN watchdog, based on this report I'm looking at, keeping close tabs on Iran's nuclear activities, anywhere between 4 and 10 inspectors in Iran on any given day. Is this more about the IAEA, Iran's nuclear activities being inspected, or are there other factors that are playing into the bigger picture and the actual nuclear part of this talks doesn't rank as high as other factors?
No, I don't think so. I know some people have said that, and you know, Gareth was talking about that's not Obama's position, the one about having anytime, anywhere inspections. Basically, what they said in the Lausanne agreement was that if you had suspicions there was something, you could ask the IAEA to go in there. And the other thing that Iran agreed to, which is unprecedented, was not just the sites, it's the supply chain. And I, you know, several times I've heard Secretary Kerry say, well, you know, if you can go and look at the supply chain, then you'll know exactly, you know, what they are, you know, what they are, you know, what they are doing. And he's been criticized for not having the IAEA go anywhere, anytime, under any circumstances, said no. Basically, if they have suspicions for whatever reason, they can make a request. And then if the request is denied, then the Security Council can talk about, you know, how to handle that and maybe reimpose sanctions if the request of the IAEA is turned down.
Okay, I'm trying to get a reading, Gareth Porter, if you can, about what the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has said, this being one of his latest statements. Warning, too soon to tell if a nuclear deal with Iran is possible, as he's waiting for the return of Iran's foreign minister from consultations in Tehran. What is your reading into what the U.S. Secretary of State has said here?
You mean specifically about Zarif's
yes,
going back to Tehran? Not,
yes.
Not about the substance of the talks?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, it's not clear to me what really is happening here, whether Zarif is going back because there's a major new proposal that has been made or not, but certainly that would be a very promising development if that's the case, and certainly something that we should hope is the case. Whether Kerry is accurate in that regard or not, but again, I mean, I think that I think the United States really has to back off a couple of major positions that it has taken, particularly I think on the possible military dimensions. That may not be such a severe problem, but I think on the inspections requirement, the United States must back off the idea that Iran does not have a veto power. It's given an explicit veto power over requests for inspection, or not inspection, but over the use of environmental sampling on sites that are not declared by Iran in the additional protocol. And I'm sorry to say that point has been lost because it has been misreported in the news media, and even Amano himself has claimed that Iran must abide by or agree to any request for inspection anywhere the IAEA wants to go. So it's simply been a misstated falsehood has been put forward by the media and by Amano on this question. And one has to hope that that John Kerry will indeed be able to back off that position that has been taken in the past.
Very well. You've got 30 seconds here. Lawrence Corp, you kind of touched on it. If there is no deal, then what?
Well, I think if there's no deal, then we have to start over. What exactly happens? Does Iran go ahead with their program? Do the sanctions remain? I think there's going to be a deal. I think the problem is going to be getting it ratified, you know, by the Congress and the political process. I mean, Secretary Kerry, for example, has stood up to those people, you know, who said, well, we have to have complete understanding of everything Iran has ever done, you know, in the history of the nuclear weapons. He said, no, we don't need to do that. We need to look forward, not backward. If you don't have a deal, I think there's going to be chaos in the region because the United States and Iran are working together in Iraq. People don't want to say it publicly.
I'm sorry. I got to jump in and get an answer from Gareth Porter. Same question. 30 seconds, Gareth Porter.
Okay.
Well, if there's no deal, you know, it's a very unpredictable situation, but I would guess that what we're going to see is the two sides going back home, another round of politics, particularly in the United States, but also in Iran, critics trying to really kill the deal permanently. Presumably the Obama administration wants to keep the option open. And then we'll see if it's not possible to reevaluate and go back with a different position when the dust clears.
Thank you very much for that, historian and investigative journalist Gareth Porter from Vienna, and former assistant to the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lawrence Corp talked to us from Washington. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitapoye and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.